Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Sometimes after a really good first hour, I'm just like, well, should we even do the second hour? I don't want to ruin it. We're like, that was such a good first hour. I don't want to ruin it in the second hour. But all right, we'll try to keep up. We'll try to keep our standards up for the second hour. By the way, it is holiday. A lot of people are driving. I checked CNN during the break, and it is 52 billion people currently on the highways of the United States. I believe that's an accurate number. I might have rounded up a little bit. 52 billion people. If you're just hearing us for the first time, first of all, I hope we're good company. We try to be good company, and thanks for listening. And whatever radio station you're listening on, we're probably on here every day, every afternoon at this time. If you'd like to know about us, you can find out about us at Catholic.com. That's our website, Catholic.com. We are an apostolate. That's basically an organization of the Catholic laity that completely devoted to explaining and defending the Catholic faith, except when we do a flannel panel, in which case we just talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective with Joe Heschmeyer. Joe, welcome back for a second hour.
It's good to be back.
Do you have any fears about ruining what so far is a really good show? Or do you feel confident we can do it for another hour?
I think I have less esteem for the first hour.
Really? So, you do?
I mean, I didn't think it was bad, but I don't think it was, the platonic form of radio.
Really? A reference to Will Smith with a, come on.
That's true.
Also with us, the president of Catholic Answers, Chris Jack. Thank you for coming back, Chris.
I think you skillfully helmed the first hour.
Really?
I'm really looking forward to sailing with you in the second hour.
Well, thank you
very
much.
Can I say something to those people in traffic right now?
Yes.
The person who cut you off is having the same kind of stress you are.
Yeah. They're just not handling it as well.
Their life is every bit as difficult as yours. In fact, it's probably more difficult. So
I feel like you're talking to me because you know I have a problem with this. When people cut me off in traffic, I don't handle it well.
Oh, now, as a matter of fact, we do have a colleague who will remain nameless who has a problem when people cut him off. Oh, I said him.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about our other colleague, Bernadette,
who's constantly cutting people off in traffic.
No, I almost ran over her in my car one time, and I think she might still be mad at me.
Wait, was she in her car, or she was walking in the parking lot?
She was walking
she's not
in the parking
real
lot.
Tall.
I like the idea that this is a Bernadette problem.
I was so scared that he was going to say, Bernadette, she keeps reporting you to the board for your bad driving. Because Bernadette, I'm sorry if you're listening. I really am sorry that I almost ran over you one day. Okay, go ahead. Joe, let's try to guess who the person is that Chris is referring to.
I think
the bad driver.
Oh my goodness.
At least there's two. There's two people there.
You cut it down to two. Then Chris's reaction is like, he makes it clear it is one of those. He's a motoring enthusiast, and he doesn't handle cutting off.
He has
in traffic
fancy barrel? Tires. He's into tires and knives too.
I'm scared of this person now.
No,
I don't know who it is.
No, he has a he's quite accomplished in the kitchen. So he has he has good knives from Japan or something.
This sounds so ominous.
Does he ever have an autumn festival named after him?
Until somebody cuts him off?
All right, we're not going to try to guess who the worst person at Catholic Answers is.
We're going to
we all know it's Trent Horn.
However, because we were talking about the sexual revolution in the last hour, you are a talented interviewer, and you were doing these long-form interviews from time to time.
I am having so much fun doing.
Which I think we used to call focus, but we went with a more
long-form
provocative
interview.
Title, like long-form. Interview. This is still something of a
puzzle.
We're
media professionals, Chris. We know how to brand
these
things.
Someone's going to explain this to me.
I feel like the irony of calling it focus when it's a side conversation was too much for people.
That's actually a very good point. It should just be called lack of focus.
Well, did a brilliant one less than a month ago with the brilliant Amy Hamilton.
Yeah.
And I thought of her, of course, because, first of all, I listened to it's 2 hours.
I know.
Now, I had to drive to El Centro.
So I got you all the way to the El Centro.
Yeah, you did. And, a little bit on the way back. But it's brilliant. You're a brilliant interviewer. And this is a remarkably perceptive young woman. And if you want to understand the effects of the sexual revolution from the perspective of a woman who suffered as a consequence, and she's quite candid about it, dial this one in, Amy Hamilton. It's on the YouTube channel.
On the YouTube, just that's where you get it, on YouTube.
She is.
Do those go on the app, Darren, the long-form interviews? Not on the app yet.
She is a student of or a research assistant for Mark Rednaris.
Yeah.
First-rate mind.
I would like to say that I am a brilliant interviewer in that interview. And here's what makes you a brilliant interviewer. You talk to someone like Amy Hamilton.
Yes.
All of a sudden, you're like a genius. Everything you say is brilliant because you ask a question and you get this. She's really wonderful. I thought she was wonderful.
Yeah, you want to get beyond the platitudes. And she's absolutely great.
It looks like it's called The Root of Our Cultural Crisis and How to Fix It.
But
there's also one on YouTube called Don't Allow Social Sciences to Shape Christianity.
Oh, that's a clip from it. That's a clip.
Second one's a clip. That one's only 3.5.
Oh, that's a media technique. You take a clip.
Yes.
It's a media technique called, this is what Matt Fred does. Let's try it.
Oh.
That's our technique.
Are we going to just have a bunch of Australian adulation in both hours?
I know. I'm very pro-Australia today, aren't I?
Yeah.
I am very pro-Australia.
Is Matt Fred from Australia?
He's like the Wizard from Oz.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of Matt Fred, the Texas Board of Education...
Well, Cameron's from Texas. Cameron.
I totally knew that. Let's just go with that. Let's just go with I knew that. The Texas Board of Education approved an option for teaching the Bible in public schools. They are outraged about this at PBS or at NPR. I don't have the audio for you because it just wasn't good enough, the audio, but they are outraged at this violation of the core tenets of American constitutionalism and the idea enshrined in the Constitution of the separation of church and state.
Not mentioned anywhere in the Constitution.
The details, all right? Facts, don't let facts get in the way of a good conversation. So either of you have any feelings about the teaching of the Bible in Texas schools? Public schools,
My favorite part about this is just a small detail. The curriculum is called Blue Bonnet Learning.
Oh, yeah. What's that
and
about?
And I really want it to be called White Bonnet Learning because of all of the really alarmed handmaidens outfits that
well, there shouldn't that be Red Bonnet?
the handmaidens. I thought it was White Bonnets on Red. Okay,
oh, maybe I don't know. That might be right.
I haven't ever had an opportunity to wear one. But, yeah, it's like look. Shakespeare is probably second only to the Bible, particularly the King James Version of the Bible, in terms of influence on the English language and, you know, expressions, idioms, everything else. It's something as simple as the apple of my eye. No. If you don't know where any of that is coming from, it's not just a spiritual impoverishment. It's also a linguistic impoverishment.
You're literary.
And it's also, like, in a real way, a cultural impoverishment. Like, if we were an Arab country, and we, you know, pretended the Quran didn't exist, we wouldn't understand our own culture. Well, we're not an Arab country. We're a Western country with an Anglo culture in terms of linguistics and history.
Of course, yeah.
And you don't understand your own history or the history of the country in which you live without knowing this. Whether you agree or disagree with its propositions, you should know it. I mean, likewise, you should know things like, you know, the Lincoln-Douglas debates. It doesn't mean you have to agree with Lincoln or Douglas. You just have to know where you come from as a people, as a culture, and be able to, you know, converse intelligently on it. That's, I think, a very basic role a school ought to be providing. I mean, I guess in a lot of ways, I'm going to get up my soapbox here for a minute, if you don't mind.
You were pretty far up on that.
We don't know what we're doing with education. You have these very vague ideas, and these ideas are in tension with one another. Are we just trying to get students to pass tests? Are we doing job preparation? Are we trying to inculcate wisdom and civic virtue?
STEM.
These are not the same roles, right?
Yeah.
And so if we don't know what we're doing, we have very little way of measuring whether a particular curriculum gets us closer to that goal or not.
G.K. Chesterton.
And so,
go ahead, John.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, G.K. Chesterton calls education the soul of a society passing from one generation to the next. So the Bible, of course, is, as Joe says, quite influential on the formation of the soul of a society, American society and European society before that, which is that which from we come. So, right, simply as a cultural understanding of whence we came, this is critical, and from where. But I'm, and I don't disagree with a single thing you said, Joe. I'm a little tired though of limiting our arguments to the literary merits of the Bible. I think that it's good. All education is Christian education. That's a fact because of the incarnation. The incarnation changes everything in education. So there's no education outside the context of Christianity. I'm guessing that what's happening in the public schools in Texas is hardly approaches, the depth of what it could be in terms of Christian education. But I think it's time for Christians to just be very explicit. Yes, we are teaching the Bible because you can't be educated if you don't know it.
I actually think a smarter move would be something like what Missouri has done. Missouri has created a very generous, basically charter program. It doesn't call it charters, voucher program. It's called Missouri Scholars, and it's privately funded, but all of the donations are completely tax deductible. And so, but not just tax deductible, you can offset your taxes by that amount, whatever you call that.
It's a tax credit.
Yeah, tax credit. There it is. So there's a tax credit for private individuals and businesses to give into the fund.
Yep.
And the fund then goes for people to go to whatever school they want to. And then you avoid all of these curriculum fights, or at least most of them, because you can just have an openly religious school and the people who are going to it want to be there and their parents want them to be there. And there's no more fight.
And could I say there's probably someone there who's qualified to teach the Bible? Because this is a problem. The Bible's not a magic book. It doesn't have some magical power outside of the context of the Christian life. It can't really be read. How am I to know what it means if there's no one to teach me? That's right. Essentially what the Ethiopian says to Philip the Deacon.
And, right, in Acts 8.
The idea that a public school is equipped for this, I think, is a dubious one. Sure. I do think it's a dubious one. And as a matter of fact, I think maybe in Texas, but in California, would you want? I mean, if they said, if something strange happened and they said, let's start teaching the Bible in Catholics in public schools in California, would that be a good thing or would it be a bad thing? Like, what would they be saying about the Bible? How would they be making sense of the Bible? It requires the Christian context. In order to have its meaning. That context might exist in Texas. I don't know. I'm not very familiar with Texas. It does not exist in California. So I don't think we should treat this as any kind of panacea. The other thing is, in states that have similar laws to Texas, the schools end up not teaching the Bible anyway because there's nobody there who's ready to teach it. So they just don't. 100 years ago, Ernest Hemingway could write a book called The Sun Also Rises, and everybody knew what he was referring to in that title. And they knew that was about the meaninglessness of human life, he was referring to Ecclesiastes, where Ecclesiastes is basically lamenting the horrible meaningless. This is a reference to the life after the First World War. Today, you could write a book and put the title The Sun Also Rises on it. Nobody knows what that – what is this, a science book?
You're just arguing for geocentrism.
Yeah, right. So I mean, the fact is you are not prepared to read English literature if you have not had exposure to the Bible. You're not prepared to read English literature. You can't do it. Even an atheist or apparent atheist like Ernest Hemingway is constantly referring to the Bible. But where is the public school teacher who is equipped to communicate the Bible? I'd rather have the person just wear their cross or their crucifix and treat the children with charity so that they associate charity with the cross, than have them try to figure out the Bible and communicate it to fourth graders.
Yeah, I mean, it raises a lot of those good questions. I think you are going to have non-religious people or non-Christians reading the Bible with students. And it does seem like it's hard to see a through line where that's going to result in, and then all these kids decided to get baptized, or then they had a greater appreciation for the kerygma or anything like that. And so it's difficult to see how that's going to be a solution. A lot of these things feel like bold stances for the sake of being bold stances, that you kind of know it's salt in the other person's eye, and that's kind of why you're doing it. You know, like the Ten Commandments.
Yes, Joe, that's a very good point. Christianity, salt in the eye of the secularist, is not what Jesus wanted.
Right. Well, it to use a trivial example, it's like the woman from Carolina who's making a thing about the bathrooms in the Congress. And frankly, in the offing, she's giving publicity to this fellow in Delaware who's confused.
Who thinks he's a lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I'm sorry. I got to take the break. We'll be. That's quite a place to end. I don't know how this happens. It's because Joe Heschmeyer is on the panel. Somehow we start talking about Texas and Missouri wins the debate. I don't even know how that happens.
I'm a little optimistic.
Catholic Answers Live.
Oh, stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the church, on the web at Magnificat.com.
Another great podcast on EWTN Podcast Central is Catholic Feedback with Keith Nestor. In this podcast, former Protestant pastor and Catholic convert, Keith Nestor, responds to questions and comments from listeners and shares his unique perspective. You can hear this and other faith-filled podcasts from our friends and affiliates around the world at EWTN Podcast Central. Visit EWTN.com/radio and click on Podcast Central today.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Whichever one of you said salt in the eye, was that you?
No, it was Joe.
That's a very good point. But we have to communicate the person of Christ. That happens person to person. Yeah. We have to be talking about Jesus Christ and what he's done, how he's healed us, how he's saved us. And all these other, there's a lot of signaling, you know, and I'm not sure how that signaling has any effect at all.
Yeah, so I haven't seen what the curriculum calls for, or if it's, or people are left to their devices, maybe that'd be better. I'm probably a little more sanguine than Joe and maybe you on this. You said, Cy, the Bible's not a magic book. That's true. But there is grace. There are supernatural graces associated with the Word of God.
Yeah,
and
right.
if it's present in the public school classroom in Texas, which, as you say, is not California, I have a little bit of hope there.
Well, we should maybe, as Catholics say, we support this as long as Second Maccabees is in there.
You know, you joke, but this was one of the major court fights on teaching religion in school. Is American public schools, excuse me, were teaching the King James Version. They were insisting on doing the longer form of the Lord's Prayer, which has the "For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory," which we don't have. It's not in the original that Jesus gave us, so we don't use it. It's ironically from the Didache, which is a great document, but is not Holy Writ. So, you know, there were these weird Catholic-Protestant fights on established religion in the public schools. And that's one of the things that ended up leading to, number one, the creation of Catholic schools, because we didn't want our kids being indoctrinated in Protestantism. And number two, eventually the secularization of the schools.
You know, the Catholic population of Texas is exploding, and it is not immigration from Mexico, though certainly there's an element there. It's Catholics moving from the American Midwest and from the Northeast. The Diocese of Dallas and Fort Worth are, I don't know, 20 times the size they were when they were created, or more.
Oh, yeah.
And they're huge.
Yeah, right.
Fort Worth is the fastest growing metropolitan area in the United States right now.
Well, and also Trent and Laura Horner down there trying to improve the Catholic population.
There's a lot of, I mean,
that's why boom started with their move there.
Well, I mean, think about University of Dallas. You had J.J. Sanford in here for another great interview.
Oh, gosh, he was great.
Brilliant. The new.
I don't think we put that interview out yet, though. Did we? Did the Sanford interview go out yet? No, it's going to be good.
It's coming.
It's coming out.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
what a good man. I really enjoyed talking with him. Yeah. I will say this. I do kind of like the Missouri answer that you gave, Joe, and I don't want to move past that too quickly, that if you just let parents choose where they send their children to school, I do think I don't know, I want to be controversial, but I feel like parents are the primary educators of their children, and they're probably best yeah. equipped to do that.
I like the Missouri.
Can I give you the worst political take I've heard?
Yes. Was it
okay?
Was it from me? Because then no.
It was not.
Oh, okay.
On Facebook. All right. It was someone had shared this thinking it was a great gotcha for whatever you want to say, moral conservatives or whatever. And they said, oh, the same people who don't want to forgive your student loans want vouchers so their kids can go to fancy private school. And it's like, wait a second. Do you not realize that your argument cuts the other way?
Yeah.
You want to be have the government pay the debt on you going to a private, maybe even religious college, which was not necessary. Meanwhile, you don't want underprivileged kids to have the ability to go to a private,
of course,
maybe religious elementary school when elementary school attendance is legally compulsory.
Right.
And so you can get this great private education because your family could afford it, and then a great college education because you're going to pass the buck on to Uncle Sam and your fellow taxpayer. But kids who actually might need financial assistance to go to private school can't get it, even though, by the way, private school attendance is in almost every case cheaper than paying to send them to underperforming public schools. I cannot fathom a good argument against vouchers.
I'm sensitive to the fact
that because you can't say
I can.
It's religious without also arguing against student
loans. All right, let you go. Then I'll
okay, so as oh, sorry, you as you described this, Joe, you made it sound like a tax credit, which I am in favor of.
Yes.
Vouchers make me uneasy, however, because if it is a payment from the state to the school, then the school is subjected to the will of the state in designing its curriculum. Right. So this, for example, is why, to use the common example in higher education in the United States, Hillsdale College refuses to take any, including Navy
FAFSA,
ROTC funding, because they don't want the government to have anything to say about how they manage their school.
And this has certainly impacted Catholic hospitals.
Of course.
Of course. Other Catholic institutions.
So a voucher as such, I am unenthusiastic about. But if in fact it is a tax credit, as you describe, my property taxes are reduced and I can spend that money on tuition for my kids at a private school. Or, as you say, a fund is created by philanthropists and they get a break. That sounds like an excellent idea. But here's the other argument against it. And it's not mine, by the way. It's the left's. It's a follow the money thing. Their jobs at stake, right? My job as a public school administrator, but it's also a follow the voters question. So, you know, we want to indoctrinate children beginning in kindergarten in this version of liberty, equality, fraternity that we were talking about in the last hour. And if they're not in the public schools, then it becomes more difficult to do that. So, yeah.
But this country did pretty good pretty well, excuse me. For that first 100 years when there were no public schools. I mean, basically.
Yeah, I'm not an enthusiast for Horace Mann.
Horace Mann, yeah, right.
Yeah.
I do feel like we need to explain to our international listeners how the American Constitution works. In the United States, the government can pay for religious preschool or religious college, but it can't pay for religious elementary school or high school because something to do with the Constitution. There, I believe I have cleared that up.
It's much clearer.
When you say it that way, I think it highlights the absurdity of the situation.
It is absurd. Of course it's absurd. But there it is. We got the Blaine Amendments. We could get into the Blaine Amendments, which are the root of this problem. But little by little, I think people are realizing that the Blaine Amendments are nothing but anti-Catholic lawmaking, and they're probably unconstitutional themselves. And so
yes.
One way or another, I do think the Blaine Amendments, of course, supported by Senator Blaine, Blaine, or in memory of Senator Blaine, passed in a bunch of states to state constitutions saying that there could be no state money that went to private or religious schools. It was just pure American anti-Catholicism.
I think that there's a reaction here, like we were talking in the last hour about the reaction to tech. And frankly, I think COVID ushered this along. A growing number of parents with children are seeing the shortcomings of the public school system, and they're looking for other places. And the momentum's going to continue. I'm sanguine.
And the thing is, though, a renaissance of parental choice might actually revivify the public schools. Often people are wrong about the consequences of these things. Like, we don't see where it's going. And so I don't think public school advocates should be quite as nervous as they are.
They're having trouble getting teachers.
Into public schools?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Well, the state I'm most familiar with in this case would be Illinois, but getting more and more difficult. Salaries, of course, are difficult, but teachers are weary of policing the classroom.
Yeah. Well, it's tough. It's hard to be a teacher. I mean, when the family can't do its job, it's very hard for the teacher to do his or her job.
Well, talk to a teacher at a parochial school in San Diego, and they'll say, look, yes, I get paid less for sure than if I were teaching in the San Diego public schools. But the stuff I have to deal with in the classroom is... I get to teach.
Yeah, right. All right. We got more to come, including Martin Scorsese with a new TV show. We'll talk about that right after this on Catholic Answers Live. Many people have forgotten just how revolutionary the Bible creation stories are. But the first three chapters of Genesis are a powerful challenge to anyone in any generation who would undervalue human lives. In the Beginning, the new book by Monica Migliorino Miller will take you on a fantastic journey through the first chapters of Genesis, unfolding the richness of life as God sees it. Get In the Beginning today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore.
When it comes to Catholic teachings about Mary, there's one question we hear more than any other. Where is that in the Bible? The answer? Everywhere. In Bible Mary, the Mother of Jesus and the Word of God, Father John Weiss opens Scripture to reveal a Mary who has been hiding in plain sight. Order your copy of Bible Mary today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, our guests today for the flannel panel. We're all wearing flannel. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And what we do with the flannel panel is we get together and we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. The last one we did didn't air because I forgot to push the record button. That's the quality of professionalism you are getting here. And I think this next topic is a hot button. I think it might be a hot button, especially for Chris Check. So I refer now to a story in the National Catholic Register. And
oh, that's EWTN's paper, right? Register
Register belongs to EWTN.
Yeah, EWTN.
Yeah.
It's the good one. is what you're trying to say.
It's not the National Catholic Reporter. The National Catholic Reporter does some good things. I would like to defend them.
I remember
a very good story in 1987 that I...
Exactly. You're going to be like, something needs to be the base for the cod and the chips that I'm making.
Joe, aren't you the one who told me three bishops have told them to quit using the name Catholic or something?
Oh, really?
I didn't know that. Yeah. I mean, I've seen the letter from the Bishop of Kansas City, who is the ordinary from where they're publishing, telling them stop using Catholic. You don't have permission to do this.
My favorite
is like, no, we're good.
Recently from the reporter was, I think it was Rebecca Bratton-Weiss or something, and who was complaining that when Catholic Answers decided to do its AI chatbot priest, we didn't make it a woman priest.
That was the main problem with that, like Rebecca. That. You caught us. I don't think it's the Catholic. I think it's the reporter part that they're not so good at.
The sanctimonious Michael Sean Winters or whatever his name is there. He's so sanctimonious.
But the National Catholic Register.
Good.
Let's see if this...
I like the way to bring this back on board.
I'm nothing if not a herder of cats. Let's see if this story registers with you, Chris Check.
I see you did there.
No meat on Fridays? Some bishops say it's a good idea. There's a proposal to bring back the rule that the U.S. bishops lifted in 1966, a suggestion by an Eastern Rite bishop that Catholics in the United States once again give up eating meat on Fridays throughout the year has drawn interest from more than a dozen bishops in this country, according to reporting from Matthew McDonald in the National Catholic Register. Chris, take it away.
This is funny, like belief in God. Some bishops think it's a good idea.
What are you talking about? Meat on Fridays is not equivalent to belief in God.
I am using a rhetorical technique called hyperbole.
All right. Hyperbole.
Excuse me.
Pronounce it correctly.
Okay, or what is it? Sarcasm. Yes. Yes. But I mean, it is a little funny to read. This was a universally accepted and approved, and the merit of which... everyone understood discipline or practice. I am in favor of it for several reasons, but the one that I love the most is one that Father Feeney, who had, a couple of doctrinal...
He might have gotten excommunicated.
He had some doctrinal things he had to work through, Joe. but he wrote a beautiful essay.
Father Feeney, Father Feeney, as I recall, was corrected by Pope Pius XII.
He was.
Okay, yeah.
He was.
All right.
But he has a beautiful essay that I recommend to everyone called Fish on Fridays.
Oh, I remember that essay. You gave me that to read one time.
He
did a good job on that.
He says, apart from the mortification of the sacrifice, the great thing about Fish on Fridays is it unites all Catholics.
Yeah.
It's an act of solidarity. Yes. And here's the other thing, I guess related to that, especially around Lent, where, everyone is sort of picking their own, their own sacrifice that they're going to make.
Right. What are you going to do for Lent? That's so much pressure.
I think related to this, we should just go back to the fast schedule of the pre-conciliar period, where I don't know, what do we have, like two fast days now? There were something like 50 or 53. I counted them once. Let's just go back to that. And we're all united in our sacrifice. So it builds solidarity. Bring it back, definitely. By the way, it never went away. Can we get this clarified, Joe? You're the apologist here.
Well, okay, it's complicated.
It shouldn't
be. I mean, it obviously did go away in one sense. Canon law still calls for meatless Fridays, but the bishops' conference in each country is able to substitute that with a different penance. And the American bishops chose to substitute it with the vague choose your own penance,
which
and announced
dumb.
That it was no longer binding upon pain of sin.
Yeah.
So it's, I would argue, even of dubious canonical authority, that replacement penance could just mean that you basically just say, don't worry about it. But nevertheless, this stands in canon law, so you're not required to really do much of anything. You're supposed to do a replacement penance
on Fridays
throughout the year, not just in Lent. You're required to do meatless Fridays in Lent the rest of the year, except on solemnities, if there's a high holy day. then you're supposed to do either Meatless Friday or some kind of penance to remind yourself of the fact of Christ's suffering on the cross.
I'm going to guess the average Sunday Mass goer does not know this distinction.
No, I think that's the thing is, I think most people in good conscience, not in bad conscience at all, they have no idea. What people know, and I use the word know, not in the strict Aristotelian sense, but what they know is in 1966, this was abrogated. You don't have to do it anymore.
Or thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and this is one of those, I actually talked to someone who said, oh, you're making that up. If that was true, the priest would have said something about it. So I think there's been a sort of pastoral failure.
Yes.
And I think it's very difficult for, like, if an individual priest just gets up and preaches about that, they're kind of labeling themselves in a certain way. And I understand, you know, the decision to not maybe have that be the hill you die on. But I do think it's really important. And I actually think if the bishops follow their British brethren's lead on this and just bring it back as the norm throughout the year, it's really good. Ironically, this dovetails very nicely with the Australian story from the first hour, which is in both cases, for those who are just tuning in, it was, you know, in Australia, they've passed a law, at least in the lower of the two houses, which might be higher in the Southern Hemisphere. I don't know how it works. They passed at least a proposed law to ban social media for those under 16. And in both cases, you're dealing with the fact that these are good ideas that have a collective action problem. Like, if you're the only person doing meatlessness, it's hard to do that. Yeah. If everyone else who's Catholic does it, it's a lot easier. I'll give two
it
quick
influences
anecdotes.
The culture.
Wait, before you give anecdotes, I need to say this.
This is literally why the fillet of fish exists.
Yeah. This is why Chris wants Meatless Fridays back, is because he feels lonely doing it himself, and he wants the rest of us in on it. That's
if every
fundamentally,
other Catholic is doing meatless, you get better fish specials.
Okay. Well, let me just give you a little bit of some statistics here, because they did some good reporting here in the National Catholic Register. And the Register contacted representatives for more than 170 Latin Rite bishops who lead dioceses in the United States and several Eastern Rite bishops in the country. Most did not respond. 41 declined comment. But of those bishops who offered a reaction, 13 either said they support it or are open to the idea of it. So they didn't get a huge, but they did their work, but they didn't get a huge.
I bet I could name them.
Do you think you can name them 13?
I'm pretty sure.
Do you think Timothy Dolan would be one of them? Because he said this.
I'm going to say yes, he did.
Though this is what he said. He gave them a quote. A voluntary return to an act of penance, for instance, Meatless Fridays, would be an opportunity for Catholics not only to demonstrate their shared commitment to care for God's creation, but also reorient themselves to a spirit of self-sacrifice and gratitude for Jesus making the ultimate sacrifice for us on the cross. That first Good Friday, Cardinal Dolan said through a spokesman.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of respect for Cardinal Dolan. I know some people criticize him, I think, harshly. I think on this point, the making it all voluntary is part of the problem. I think an actual bit of Episcopal leadership of saying, this is what we're doing.
Right.
This is part of the way the bishops exercise fatherhood, frankly. It's not just everybody do your own thing. It's like, no, in this house, this is what we're going to do. And I think it's really good because it gets everybody on board. If everyone's, I mean, I've had times where I've been to Catholic events on Fridays throughout the year.
And they're serving meat.
And the main course is meat.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
And it's like, this is such a basic starting place that it can't just be, you can be the person who tells, oh, actually, I've got special dietary needs. If this is something that's being done collectively, it's much more doable. Now, I actually think I'll agree with Dolan in this sense. There can be something very meritorious about the fact that you're choosing to do it as opposed to just going along with it. You know, in seminary, for instance, it's very easy to keep Meatless Fridays if you're not setting your own menu. You're just eating what they serve, and they're not serving meat. And so there's a sense you can maybe not even notice that it's a Friday, unless the food is, like, bad. You know, like, you might not even be aware. So I understand the kind of argument on the other side that it's better if it's, like, a voluntary act. But there really is something to be said for the fact that, like, this unites us.
Yes.
Like, one of the great bits of brilliance in the Mosaic Law is you have all of these weird and seemingly arbitrary rules that make the Jewish people distinctive.
Right.
And that's it creates a deep-seated cultural identity. and creates deep bonds so that even someone who maybe isn't practicing has something that they connect to the religion with. Catholicism had that. And we kind of scuttled it.
Yeah, we did.
And we see in the numbers what happened.
And it has value.
The next thing you know, we will be influencing what kind of films are made.
What do you mean? Because of the
well,
the
because just because of this. Yeah, well, of course, I'm referring to that moment when there was a Friday abstinence, and we also influenced the kind of films that were made with the Legion of Decency,
the Hays
right?
Code.
The Bring Hays Code, right? Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, I think that if you have a cultural unity that begins with. We're going back to that when Catholics go to fish fries and or whatever it is, they abstain from meat. That's the beginning of a solidarity that will find expression in a greater cultural influence.
You know, when you talk
it'll be fun to be Catholic.
When you talk to people who come in as converts to the Catholic Church these days, a very common kind of complaint is they thought there were going to be more Catholic distinctives.
Yeah.
They thought there was going to be more opportunities to be a little odd. And I don't think Meatless Fridays is again any kind of panacea. I've used the word panacea for two different stories we've covered here, so that's my vocabulary word for the day. Look it up, kids.
Did you find that in the Bible? Was it in the Bible?
But there is something about these Catholic distinctives that do all those things that you both mentioned
that
reinforce our identity, that make us recollect what Christ did for us, and that also make us a little odd in the eyes of the world, which is good for us to stand out a little bit. That's not bad for us. That's good for us to stand out. I mean, you know, successful social groups stand out a little bit. They have a little bit of an odd whatever, you know, you can tell that they're part of that group. They have markers. And why did we give up the Catholic markers? I don't know. It was not a good idea, I don't think.
No.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things. I was watching recently a Protestant YouTuber lamenting the liturgical state of evangelical Protestantism, this idea of a rock concert in a TED Talk. And he basically said, we're offering a worse version of what people can get in the world already. And We're copying the noise and chaos of the outside world, and people are wanting something other than that. Like, they're wanting a break from 6 days of that. And if they come into church and they're getting more of that, they're not spiritually satisfied. And so what they're wanting is something radically different. And he was saying, like, this explains why Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy are drawing a lot of young people, because it is radically different. And I think if we lose sight of that, like, there's a real opportunity to say, okay, so the world's going crazy. We will boldly, and not in a salt in the eye sort of way, but just boldly, because these things are true, good, and beautiful, stand for something different, and people will be attracted to it on the merits of that, and we don't need to compromise that. We don't need to budge that.
Let me give you the counter argument, which people are like, oh, yeah. Come on. Look, Jesus taught us to feed the hungry and clothe the naked and to visit the prisoner. Why are you obsessing about these things that really are, they don't get to the core of it?
So that's a non sequitur.
He fed them fish, technically. Right. So that's allowed.
He multiplied the fish.
Well, my argument would be, frankly, the church didn't get better at caring for the poor because it gave up, because it started eating meat on Friday.
Yeah, these aren't exclusive. Why are they?
Well, not only did it not get better, with the collapse of men and women's religious orders, it got markedly worse.
Yes,
right.
Like, if we had healthy religious orders right now, and they were widespread at the rates they were, say, in the mid-20th century, you know how many more people would be feeding, clothing, serving? And, I mean, obviously, it's a complicated story there. But it's hard to imagine that we got better at any of those things by losing a constitutive part of our identity.
Right.
It'd be like saying, hey, I don't think the military needs distinctive uniforms anymore. They just need to work on fighting. Like, you've missed something about human anthropology making that argument.
Well said, Joe.
That analogy of the uniforms was really, did that just pop into your head right now?
It did.
Did it really? Well, yeah. We need to give Joe a minute to recover, because that must have hurt when that popped in. Well, we'll be right back. Well, Martin Scorsese is going to get his minute of our time. We'll do it when we come back.
He's
on Catholic Answers Live. I know.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. Today, EWTN is the largest Catholic media organization in the world, broadcasting in multiple languages 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. If you're wondering what's going on, well, maybe you've never heard our program before because you're traveling and you found us in the car. If that's the case, thank you for spending some time with us. We're very pleased to get to spend some time with you. You can find out all about us at catholic.com. Whatever station you're listening to us on right now probably broadcasts us at the same time every weekday. And also, another thing you can find at catholic.com is an answer to virtually any question you've got about the Catholic faith, and a really good search engine to help you find that answer.
The best in the world.
Check us out at catholic.com. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. I'm talking with Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers and a wonderful writer, and Chris Check, the president of Catholic Answers. And what we do on occasions, every now and then, the three of us get together and we take 2 hours to talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And what could be more important than television? There's nothing on earth more important than television. And so I bring you to the story that, I'll tell you what, since we're going to be talking about media that none of us have seen, Martin Scorsese has a new TV show, or there's a movie called Conclave out. Which would you like to hit first? Either of you?
Oh,
have any interest in
either? I know about the Conclave.
Tell us about the Conclave thing.
Well,
so
apparently it's impossible.
It is an adaptation of a book, and it just proposes, what if the cardinals got together and decided to elect someone who cannot become the Pope because of one of the two basic requirements to be the Pope?
Yeah, you have to be a man.
Oh, so the
and you have to be baptized.
Yeah. Oh, this is a non-baptized?
Well, no, it is a baptized woman.
Oh,
so spoiler alert, if you were planning on seeing Conclave,
first of all, what's wrong with you if you were planning on seeing Conclave? But go ahead. So the whole thing revolves around that they elect
a biological woman who is confused about her identity.
It's too bad, too.
So it's a transgender kind of thing. It's a gender. I didn't even know it was a gender movie.
I think that's the big reveal at the end.
Oh,
I think
this is exciting. How titillating.
It's being transgressed.
We must all go see this now.
Yeah, but it's too bad because it's got Stanley Tucci in it. He's a talented guy.
I love his Italy TV show.
Yes, his cooking show.
Yeah, his cooking show in Italy.
Well, actually, he made a brilliant film called, is it First Night? It's called First Night.
I don't know.
It's where the two brothers are opening the Italian restaurant.
Oh, I've never seen it.
It is a brilliant movie.
Well, we have an Italian right there. Do you know this? Is it called First Night?
It's called First,
John Brasillo?
First Night. First Night with Stanley Tucci.
Look, he made you're it like Italian. You should ago. Know all the movies that involve Italian restaurants. Get it together, John.
I think it's First Night. Here's the thing. A plot device in this picture is that there is a large right-wing contingent in the College of Cardinals, and then the lefties
that don't want to vote for a lady.
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, but the progressives, represented by Stanley Tucci, they are we've got to do the machinations or whatever to overcome this substantial right-wing portion of the. Anybody watching this movie right now is. Which College of Cardinals is it that they're talking about? So it's a silly premise. But his movie First Night is great.
All right. So Conclave sounds like a sad undertaking. But I think Voldemort's in it too, though. Is it Voldemort? Does anybody know? I think the guy who played Voldemort is in
Harry. Big Night, by the way, is the name of the movie.
Oh, Big Night.
All right.
Is it Big Night? There is a movie called Big Night, but I don't know if that's the same one.
Poor Martin Scorsese has been waiting for 2 hours for us to talk about him. He gets no attention until we talk about him.
Big Night.
So Scorsese has an... This is, first of all, this didn't seem like a real thing when I first saw it. Fox Nation is sort of a TV station, sort of a website. It's one of the two. I actually subscribed to it for a month once because Tom Nash was staying at my house and there was some comedian that was going to appear on it. He wanted to see that comedian and it was only $2 to subscribe for a month. So I said, all right, Tom.
Like that your description just makes Tom Nash sound like a bad roommate or something.
No, he's a great guy.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say it that way. I apologize. I love Tom Nash. I'm sorry I said
yeah,
it
Tom's
that way.
Tom's great.
Had I known Scorsese was coming, I probably would have kept my subscription going. But
how much do they pay you? This is $2.
But they don't pay me that much. But Fox,
okay, fair enough.
Fox Nation sounds like that sounds kind of Fox Newsy, right? Martin Scorsese doesn't sound like a Fox Newsy kind of guy. And
well,
then
not only that, yeah? Martin Scorsese really famously was against streaming.
Oh, he was.
He wanted movies to be like in theaters and was really like, if you release it on Netflix, it shouldn't be available for award shows. And he was leading the charge against that and then had
and then they started giving him money to make the stuff he wanted to make. But then
TV has ruined
Scorsese's making a TV show. So this adds to my my perplexity. And then it's a TV show about Catholic saints. The confluence of rivers here strikes me as odd.
The last part is totally believable.
Well, I know he's very interested in Catholic. He's a Catholic.
Well, he's baptized. He's a Baptist, probably confirmed too. I don't think he's a practicing Catholic, but I think he thinks a lot about the fact that he's a Catholic.
He went to a preparatory seminary.
I think so. And he's all. I mean, how would you be an artist raised as a Catholic and not be have? I mean, you'd have to be an idiot not to use the Catholic.
Well, he made
thing.
The picture about the Japanese. Martyrs,
right, and he made the Last Temptation of Christ,
or not martyrs.
Last Temptation of Christ was Marty.
He has made some good pictures.
Oh, wonderful! Yeah,
he may be a genius.
Yeah, I think so. But you see the Fox Nation thing and the TV show thing, it all threw me. So now I want to see it, especially because the first episode is about my hero,
Joan of Arc,
and your hero,
Joan of Arc.
Joe, you need to make Joan of Arc your hero. Then you could join our club. Joan of Arc Hero Club. There's two members. You need to be the third member.
Yeah.
All right. We're up to three members for our club.
I made a Joan d'Arc de Triomphe joke once on this show that you didn't care for. But
I'm shocked.
Joan
it was a pun that I didn't care for? I'm shocked.
I know.
Joe.
Who would have guessed? Especially a multilingual.
What's it called? Fox Nation? News Nation?
Fox Nation.
I'm going to get it and watch this.
I think you're going to be disappointed. Joan of Arc is sort of the low-hanging fruit for people like Scorsese or...
What does that mean, people like Scorsese?
Other filmmakers who want to touch Catholic points or engage the Catholic culture.
Without believing in the hypostatic union?
Because it's a strange story and there's a...
There's a little cross-dressing in it.
Can I cast it as a feminist? Tell the feminist version of events or the crazy person version of events or whatever it is?
Turns out, unlike becoming Pope, women can lead armies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And
so it contrasts nicely with Conclave.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, but I want to see it unless that... Okay, well, first of all, as research, could I get Catholic Answers to pay for my subscription?
Sure.
Oh, what?
$2.
I just got myself $2 there.
This is totally the equivalent of asking if a friend can stay the night in front of the friend. can they spend the night at our house?
But there is this thing about, great art really should engage with the Catholic Church. I mean, it's silly to think that you're going to make great art that doesn't engage with the Catholic Church. The most important... benefactor and inspiration in the history of the world is the Catholic Church. So I'm glad Scorsese's doing it. I don't know much about him personally. I don't know what his, but it does seem to be something that's not weird, but like that actually has a Catholic. It seems to have some like real love for the saints. Like he really
wants
to.
He's one of these people who's like out to get the Catholic Church.
I think he probably has
a complicated relationship. There might be some issues on which we'd part company with him on certain things. But I think this is someone who grapples with the idea of Catholicism very honestly.
And recognizes and the saints as the sign of something.
Based on his body of work, some of which I think is very talented filmmaking, I am not sanguine about this particular
project.
Well,
back.
I think he's come around some religiously in the last few years.
Yeah.
All right.
Although this is a project he's been planning since the 80s, apparently.
Tom Nash, one of the greatest people there is, so I apologize for any...
Also,
I want to apologize to all the people of Australia for any implication that some Australians might be demons. I want to apologize to the state of Texas that you lost in your own story to the state of Missouri. That's unfortunate. So many apologies should be made, but I will find out about this.
You
Scorsese
are a regular
thing.
Apologist.
I should be an apologist. I'm good at apologizing. Joe Heschmeyer, it's always great to get to talk with you. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
And likewise.
And Chris Check, it's always pretty good to talk with you.
I'm thankful for my brothers on the flannel panel.
Oh, me too. Thank
Amen.
You, Chris.
Happy
That's
Thanksgiving,
beautiful.
Everybody.
I'm going to go spend that Catholic Answers $2 on Fox Nation and watch me some Martin
money.
Scorsese. See you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.